Hey, good evening. So, I haven't did a podcast in a while. Oh my goodness. But I have something that I want to talk about. I want to talk about a few things. And the number one thing I want to talk about is like when I was younger growing up, and one thing that I don't like about churches and stuff like that is they try to have your mind a certain way. And I'm right now at the place where I just reset my thoughts and stuff like that. And, you know, I was told like not to listen to Farrakhan, and don't get me wrong, I really don't care for the man, but he says some really enlightening shit. I gotta give it to this man. Like, he says a lot of things that make sense when it comes to racial equality and racial adversities, you know. And what people fail to realize, and I'm going to say it in this podcast, is like back in the days, you know, a lot of innocent young black, Latino, like minorities were picked up off the street. Like if a crime was committed, they would pick these people up off the street, knowing that they didn't have anything to do with the crime. But back then, because of the racial intent, they wanted to look good for the public. You know, they wanted to gain public trust. And the reason why I'm talking on this is because it's happening today. And I feel like it's happening with that kid, Chanel Lewis. I don't believe that he committed that crime. I don't think he has the mental capacity to commit such a crime, you know. And I feel like they hurry up with these cases and then they pin these cases on these innocent people just to make a case. And a lot of it has to do with racism. You know, it's these guys that are not from here that don't even try to get to know the community or whatever, but already have a preconception on the black and the Latinos being the bad guys, you know. And I was looking at an interview with some retired cops that said that even if that person was innocent, because of quotas, like they had to make an arrest. That is a powerful statement, and it's a fucked up statement. And I'm going to tell you why it's fucked up. It's fucked up because in that line of work, because you want to earn a paycheck, that you had to sacrifice the livelihoods of innocent people. Make it make sense. You know, with this whole this whole thing with George Floyd, it's been an eye-opener. Do you hear me? About race and just being prejudiced. You know what I mean? And it's like, when this idiot was in office, he's going to be in office into January. You know, he sparked a lot of racism. Like, people was concealing it. But now they were comfortable and saying, nigga this, nigga that, nigga, nigga, nigga. You know what I'm saying? And then what makes it bad is like, we got to stop calling each other nigga. We have to, like, if we want that respect, we got to respect ourselves. And I say that with the utmost respect, you know. And a lot of things too is like, you know, I'm from the projects and I see a lot of these parents that don't really do anything with their kids, and these streets raise the kids. So when the streets raise the kids, you're giving them to vultures. And what I mean by vultures, they're an easy target for these cops that don't have nothing but time on their hand to falsely arrest your kid, you know. And I see it all the time. And I try my best to talk them out of the streets, try to talk them into doing something better. You know what I mean? I was like, because there's always an entrance besides the street, some type of interest that these kids like to do, you know, but they don't have that support, you know. And then a lot of it is single parent homes. Like, the mother is like frustrated because she's like, I'm a single mom and I'm just trying to figure out whether I go wrong. I work and I want to give him, you know, everything that I didn't have. And that's right there. You know, y'all got to stop doing that. Y'all got to stop putting these kids in all this fucking name brand. I be seeing people put kids in name brands and kids can't even read this shit. And guess what? when they get of a certain age and you can no longer afford it, they're going to do whatever it takes to make sure that they look good because you already set the standards. You set the bar on high for them on how they should look. Me, personally, you know, I shop at Primark because I love Primark. I love the clothes, I love the fashion, and I love the prices. You know what I mean? And what I like, too, is like the young guys at my job and everything, they go to Primark and they get certain things and they look damn good in it. So it's like, I'm not here to try to keep up with the Joneses or try to look like this person. I don't want to feel like I'm in competition with anybody, because the moment you feel like you're in competition with me, then you don't need to be around me. You know, I dress to impress myself. When I go outside and I want to look a certain way, it's because I put it together. And I put it together with a budget in mind. I just don't go over that budget. And, you know, and this generation and everything. And what this generation has to realize is that we comes from kings, queens, and pharaohs. You know, we come from these people that are like strong in stature, and you know, they have the riches, and you know, and it's like you guys don't even have to show your riches. And it's like I was telling one of my friends the other day, I was telling her the difference between rich and wealth. And I was like, rich is temporarily and wealth is permanent. And when I say that, is that I encourage people, especially people of color, to take business classes. And I encourage them to do it where they run their business for a certain amount of years, but the business does so well that they train others how to run that business. And then they create products. And like those type of products will never go out of style. That's generational wealth, because you know, when you pass on, your kids, your grandkids, they will receive the benefits of it. And a lot of people of color and Hispanics, you know, we're the minority, whatever, like we just don't understand that. And, you know, getting back to the whole jail thing, I wanted to also say it's because we're poor, and no, we're not even poor. I'm not even put that in the universe. We're not poor. What it is that we don't have the funding that, you know, people that's not us would have, you know what I mean? Like they'll get lawyers and stuff like that. And people like us, like a lawyer is like the last thing of our concern. And I just feel like because people of color and minorities, you know, they don't have that type of money to afford the lawyer, whatever, is we get legal aids and they do what they can. But if they're a paid lawyer, then they do more. And because when these crackers was out there arresting our babies and stuff like that, we didn't have the money or whatever, you know, the kids, the innocents were sacrificial lambs. You know, they were sacrificed because they had to go through this whole process. And then 9 times out of 10, like these wrongful convictions are now overturned. And now these people are exonerated. And you done fucked up anywhere between 6 and 30 something years of their life that they miss, that they can never, ever get back because of you wanting to prove your case, which was a false case. You know, it's just fucked up when you think about it. It's just like, wow. You know, you being young and you hear stuff on the news, you'd be like, damn, that's kind of fucked up. If they did that, that's fucked up. But now that I'm older and I looked at some shit, you know, and I've been reading and watching documentaries and shit like that, I'm like, yeah, racism has really been here since we've got our so-called rights, you know. And then again, like, it's not even really our rights, because 90% of black people who don't have that, they don't have the celebrity money or whatever, they end up in jail. You get some celebrities that go to jail, but that's very few of them. Why? Because they have that money. And, you know, I know of somebody who went to jail, did 27 years, and in the process, they lost their moms along those 27 years. And 9 times out of 10, when they convict you know, the our babies or whatever, the mother dies of a broken heart, you know, and people don't realize that they're like so grief-stricken and just so hurt that they feel helpless. They feel like they failed their kid. And it's not that they failed their kid. It's just that we don't have the resources, you know. And I really wanted to really touch on that. And also, I want to talk about the Orishas, right? Now, when I talk about the Orishas, I talk about Orishas as such as Oshun, Yemaya, Chango, Oya, Orola. You know, and those are African, those were African kings and queens, but they are spiritual guides now. And what they're not telling you in the books is that the spiritual guides, like those guides were really powerful, and they were powerful in certain things. And when they brought the slaves over, the slaves was erased from all of their knowledge of their beliefs, and they were beating into Christianity. And, you know, to this day, I do not like Christianity. I don't, because I see black people, people of color, and even white people have made this a money-making business instead of helping people. I see people, what they will do is like they'll get up there and they'll preach, and if it sound good, you pay them. You know what I mean? Or they'd be like, oh, the Bible says you give 10%. And that does not necessarily mean 10% of your earnings. You can give 10% by feeding the homeless. You can give 10% by, you know, spending time with a elderly person, a senior citizen. You could give your 10% by buying groceries for somebody. You know what I mean? That's, you know, your 10%, you're doing it for somebody else. But, you know, what they've been doing all these years have just been manipulating. It's just, you know what I mean? And when I did my research and did some studies back on Orishas and stuff like that, I realized like how powerful they really were. And it's like with people that are not us, what they do is just manipulate things. And I just realized how they manipulate the court system, because let me tell you how strong racism is, right? Now, racism is like this, right? You're a black kid, you're on the street, you're coming home from school, you're 18 years old, you're doing everything your mom has told you to do. Very good kid. They pick you up like they did Corey Wise and all of them, and they put you in an interrogation room, and you're in there for hours. And this is what, and that didn't only happen to them, it happened to a lot of other young black men back then that is unspoken of. I'm going to break down this racism thing, right? So they get into that or whatever. And so then now they are being held against their will because of the money situation, right? Now, with that being said, they're set up by the prosecutor, by the DA, the judge, and mostly an all-white jury. You might have like maybe 1 or 2% that are colored, but guess what? They're outnumbered. With that being saying, like, and you know, and these crooked ass cops back then would be like, whether you did it or not, you going down for it. Because at the end of the day, I'm a white cop that's arresting you. I was like, you're gonna get prosecuted by a white DA. You're gonna have an all white jury. And when you go to prison, it's going to be all white. So at the end of the day, you have no rights. And we just took away your livelihood. And this is what they used to say to young people back then. And a lot of these cops, they used tactics back then by threatening our babies, you know, threatening them. You know what I mean? And then what I've seen them do is they'll pick up somebody off the street and hold them at the precinct against their will. And then by the time they come home, the hood would be like, oh, you a snitch. And they'd be like, no, I didn't say anything. They did that, you know. And it's like these crooked ass cops or whatever, they have tactics and things that they do to just manipulate shit. Now, I'm going to get back to, you know, my Orishas and stuff like that. And so what I've learned, too, is when we came over, you know, we had our own set of religion, you know. We believed in certain things and stuff like that. And we believed in the Orishas back then. When we got here, what they did is, you know, us as slaves or whatever, they beat their religion into us. You know what I mean? And it's been passed down from generation to generation to generation. And I'm not saying there is no God. That's not what I'm saying. I do believe in God. But that whole Jesus Christ thing, like, I'm just not feeling it. It just doesn't seem realistic to me. So to each to own. But I'm just really breaking down how they have manipulated these things. And, you know, they put together a Bible and people read the Bible. And if it's good for you, listen, I'm happy for you. I truly don't believe everything that happens in that Bible. I just, you know what I mean? I might read some parts. Like, I love the book of Job because for me, it's inspiration. You know, I love it. And I also like the book of Psalms because Psalms is just like, it just speaks to my spirit, you know? And another thing that, you know, we have to do, we have to pay homage to our ancestors. And the reason why I say that is because you guys will never understand the sacrifice that they have made for us. And when I say that, research it. Ask your parents, ask your grandparents, ask your uncles. You know, I remember I had a conversation with my mom back in the days. And I said to her, I said, you know, when you was growing up in the South, how was it? And she said, you know, back in the 40s, because that's when she was born, the 40s and 50s, she said she was on the back of a wagon. And, you know, they had to pick cotton. And she said how nasty those white people were to her. Like, they would throw money at them. Just throw the money at them, you know what I mean? I said, wow, you know, and I went into, how did it make you feel? And she didn't want to get into that conversation. And I'm going to say, like, she was bothered by it. And really, really bothered by it. And, you know, somebody at my job made a comment to me. And it was uneasy with me. It was very uneasy with me. And I had to go to my boss because I didn't know how to address it without anger being in it. So I went to my boss and I had a talk with her, whatever. I'm like, listen, I don't know how to address this. I said, if it was in the streets, it'd be a different thing. But it's a coworker, somebody that I got to work with. And she was like, nope, I understand how you feel. And I'm going to take care of it. And she did. And that made me happy, you know. And, you know, I just had to come on here and really talk about race and, you know, equality and stuff like that. And, you know, one thing I could say, like, I'm really down for the brown. Like, I'm really down for my people. I just want my people to just get some knowledge, some understanding of who you are. You understand? Like, we come from great people, great leaderships. And sometimes, you know, when people talk, especially like my elders talk, it's not that I don't want to listen to them. It's just that they don't speak to my spirit. You understand? When you speak to my spirit and my soul, you get my undivided attention. Like, wow. You know what I'm saying? And some people just be yapping and yapping and yapping and yapping. And I'd be like, oh, just shut the fuck up. You know, that'd be my whole thing. And, you know, I remember living next door to this old lady. Very old. And I'll never forget what she said to me. She was like, you need to go get checked out because you might be walking around here with AIDS. So I told her daughter, I was like, yo, go, you know, get your mom's. She was like, that's my mother. I was like, yeah, but that doesn't excuse for her to, that shouldn't be an excuse for her to be disrespectful. I said, she's disrespectful. I said, she's so fucking disrespectful. It doesn't make any sense. She's too fucking disrespectful. And I was like, the things that she said out of her mouth shouldn't come out of her mouth. She was like, you know, but that's my mother. And I was like, I don't care. I'm not excusing her. I'm not excusing this behavior. I was like, I demand respect because I give respect. And I was like, if I had AIDS, so what? It's nobody's fucking business. I was like, I don't have it. And for her to make that remark, she's going to have people around here thinking that. You understand? So I'm like, no, it's not cool. Don't put that title on me because I'm not accepting that title. Like, I had to go off on her. And, you know, she walked away from me. I guess she was in her feelings because I spoke to her about her mom's. But at the end of the day, I don't give a fuck. I demand my fucking respect. And that's just it. You're not going to say what the fuck you want to say to me. And it's you know. And, you know, lately, like, my Oisha, I've been, like, really working with her. And she's been working with me. And she's just fucking amazing. I'm telling you. One thing I could say about them, you take care of them and they take care of you. And, you know, I've been talking to her and I think she knew. And one thing about the Orishas, the way they handle you is like they sit you down spiritually and they just fucking get in your ass. That's basically what it is. And what my Orisha did was sat me down. First of all, my Orisha had me disconnect. Had me disconnect from everybody except for two people she left me in connection with. Two people. She was like, those two people you can connect with. Everybody else, disconnect. I said, okay. So I'm saying to myself, how do I know this shit is real? It's real because something popped up on Facebook and I screenshotted it. And it basically said, you know, I'm out here trying to help everybody else, but it's time that I start working on myself. Something to that nature. And I posted it. Right. And so the people that was I used to be in connection with, I had to disconnect myself with them. You know what I'm saying? The closest people. I just had to do it because one thing about the Orishas, when they want to be with you and they want to work with you or whatever, you got to give them your undivided attention. You have to give them. You got to sacrifice this. You got to sacrifice that. And I'm telling you, they're going to show you some things. And so I was going through what I was going through because spiritually, I just needed that break. You understand? And the reason why, because it was so much stuff trying to manifest within me and it was negative and it was toxic. And my Oisha was like, no, because at the end of the day, if you take care of me, I'm going to take care of you. And at the end of the day, like, you're not going to profit from that shit. You're not going to grow from it. I was like, oh, shit. You know what I mean? And so, like, she started removing people. You know what I mean? And people felt like I was being negative towards them. No. And what they had to realize is, like, I didn't make that decision to remove you. That's not what it is. They did it for me. They removed you because they saw how you was moving with me. They saw how you were using me. They saw how you was taking advantage of me. So at the end of the day, they like, no, I got to remove you from this. And that's what they did. Now, when you go to the, let me tell you something. Although that they removed me from certain individuals, I never went on a spree where I'm going to block you. I'm not going to talk to you. I'm going to talk to you, but it's going to be in my time. It's not going to be on your time because your time is always some fucking drama going on. It's going to be on my time. Well, hello, how you doing? And this and that. And that's just it. But when you go on a spree to block me, that means you gave me your ass a kiss. And with that being said, Bubba Lice, because you was never my friend. You went on that extreme to just block, like, wow. Why? And didn't even send me a text to be like, oh, well, it's not you, and it's not. So being like, I didn't get a text or whatever, because you knew I wasn't taking no phone calls. I just couldn't. My Oishas was like, no, don't do it. And I didn't do it. And I have to listen to my Oishas. But when you go to that extreme, then you said, fuck you. And I would never, ever say that to you, to anyone. Fuck you. You got to really piss me off. You got to really get on my bad side in order for me to be on some fuck you. Because that's just, listen, I'm just not about that. I just don't want to be this negative person. You understand that I'm just trying to be filled with so much positivity and love. And that's all I want to give. And that's all I want to show. And that's what I have. So you being removed, I look at it as a blessing. I do. And I wish you the best. I have no ill feelings towards you, no ill intentions. I wish no harm on you. I wish you happiness, health, prosperity, like all of that. I wish all that good stuff upon you. I don't hate you, but I just know, like, I can't fuck with you. No matter how you come back to me, I got to be cordial with you. And cordial is just hello and goodbye.
Cordial is not having no type of conversations like I used to have with you. The conversations are going to be brief and short. You know what I mean? Because I know what I have done out of my heart, the kindness of my heart. Like, I know what how hard I go for people. And so when people do like little funny stuff like that to me, I'm like, okay, at the end of the day, I guess you think I'm mad, but I'm not. I just know how to move with you. And I'm like this. I would like for everybody to just understand their Orishas. Just look it up. And you know, whichever one you compare to, that's you. I know, like, Oshun is mine. Why? Because she represents beauty. She likes the water. And I love, in the summertime, I love the beach, you know. And I love taking baths and showers and stuff like that. Like, I love water. And she's just, you know, she's very feminine like me. Like, I like wearing dresses and stuff like that. And I like looking good. And she's all about beauty. And she's all about self-love. And, you know, it took me a while to get to this point to just love myself, flaws and all. But I'm here. And when I love myself, guess what? I'm not looking for anybody to love me the way I do, because only I could love me the way I love myself. Now, if love comes my way, I will gladly welcome it. But don't, I'm like, all right, love, don't come my way with a hidden agenda. You stay over there. And a lot of things that I've been doing too is speaking stuff into existence. I speak stuff into existence. And what I'm really good at right now is manifesting things. Like, if I want something and, you know, I'll be like, yo, I want that or whatever. I'm good at just getting what I want, you know. And the one thing that I have learned to do is trust the process. I've learned how to trust the process. Wow. That means not rushing things, being patient with things, and it'll come your way. It will in due time. All right, guys, I took up 27 minutes and I guess 25 seconds of your time. And I'm going to end this because this was amazing. I needed to get all that out. All right, guys, I love you. Spread kindness. Whatever you do, tell somebody something good. Tell them that they're beautiful. Tell them you like their hair. Tell them you like their dress. Tell them those are cool pants. Oh, that haircut looks nice on you. Give some kindness, because we need that. All right. Love you guys. Bye.